Fred Rogan and Rodney Peet, AM 570 LA Sports, the BJ's Restaurant and Brewhouse Lunch Hour, 866-987-2570. Don't forget BJ's Restaurant and Brewhouse, over 140 menu items, 50 craft beers, one-of-a-kind Pizookie dessert. And if you give us the best take in this first hour, you get a $100 gift card to BJ's Restaurant and Brewhouse. Wherever you are and whatever you do, there is a BJ's Restaurant and Brewhouse near you. Let's cut to the chase right off the top, Rodney. If you're being honest, Clayton Kershaw has not seemed right. He seemed a little off all season. Would you agree?
100%. He's just not been the same guy. And, you know, everybody's velocity changes, but his dropped off a little bit. When I look at him, he doesn't walk people. It's like him and Kenley Jansen. They don't walk people. But when the walks get up, you're like, something's off. Something is, that's to me, that's a sign that they're not quite right when they're walking guys. And it's been an unusual amount of walks for both him and Kenley Jansen to start the season.
You wonder if he was simply trying to work through it because, you know, he's the last guy that doesn't want to go out and take the
Correct.
Ball. You're wondering if I'm going to work through this. I'm going to push myself as hard as I can. It'll be mind over matter. I'll figure it out. I'll bust through it.
Yeah.
But finally said, no mas. Well, I got to tap out.
And when you're older, sometimes that takes over more than when you're younger, that mentally I can work myself through this. I'm older. I'm savvy enough to work myself through the kinks and whatever. And you go a little bit longer than you normally would. And you become a little bit more stubborn as you get older. And so I think that's what's happening with him, that he knew something was going on. But felt like, as you said, hey, I can work through this. I'll get through this and we'll be all right. But eventually, it caught up to him, as anything when it comes to age. Father Time is undefeated. And I don't know, I'm not 100% saying it's all about Father Time, but certainly something was not right from the beginning with Clayton Kershaw.
At what point in your career did you realize, I can't quite do it the way I used to do it?
You know, it was training camp more than anything else. You know, the game, you can gear up and be ready for it. Then it becomes the recovery process. You know, when you're younger, you start feel good on Wednesday after a game on Sunday. And then as you get older, it's like, man, I still don't feel good Thursday. And then as you get older and really get older, for me, it was like, man, I didn't start feeling good until Saturday. And then you got to play the next day. And so the recovery aspect of it was the toughest thing to come to grips with. And when it starts to linger all week long, then you know that your body's not responding the right way. And it's pretty much time to shut it down.
Let me toss this theory into the mix. And by the way, Clayton is seeing our good friend, Dr. Neil Elitrosh. And according to what we have heard, and this is just simply what we've heard, it's about a 4 to 6 week process here, just trying to medicate, rest, and recover. But let me throw this out. And this is a theory we heard. By the way, I'll preface it, Rodney, by saying I completely disagree with it.
Okay.
All right. So we know he can opt out after this year, meaning he's on the market and could get a much bigger payday, at least in his mind, than he's going to get for the next 2 years with the Dodgers. So he says, you know, I can work through this. Maybe in the past I have. But this go-round, wait a minute. There's money on the table here, and there's no way in the world I'm going to do anything to jeopardize that. I'm tapping out. I'm going to the doctor. And let time heal this thing. I'm in no rush. I do not subscribe to that theory. Do you?
Yes, I do. I don't care who it is. You're in the last year of a contract. You want to be at your best. And especially, not just the last year of a contract, but this is the last year of his probably last contract. This is probably the last deal he'll get. Big deal.
Big deal.
Big deal that he will get. So absolutely that comes into play. You know, at the end of the day, yes, it's a great game, great sport. You know, you're thankful that you're able to do this for a living, but it's also business. And you got to look at it from a business perspective. He goes out there and works through this and continues to struggle. The narrative is going to be that, he's on the downside. He's on the downside. He's not worth the money that we're going to pay him or anybody would pay him. So he's not going to get what he deserves. And in his mind, it's like, if this is the last year of my deal and I'm up for a big, big time deal, I'm going to go out on my terms, or at least I'm going to put it out there on my terms when I'm 100% healthy, and I'm not going to go out there and work through some injuries and then diminish my value by going out there 80% or 75%. I'm going to make sure I'm healthy because there's still a long season. I'll come back after the All-Star break. I can go like gangbusters because that's when the decisions are going to be made at the end of the year. I want to be fresh at the end of the year and not right now.
If you're a fan listening, or if the fans hear that, do you think any of them believe, well, that's kind of selfish? Selfish to the team?
No, because you're dealing with injuries. You're not dealing with somebody that's just saying, look, I'm going to hold out. I'm not going to, you know, I just want to, you know, I got a nagging little injury on my hangnail on my left toe. It is his arm. It's his pitching arm. So, and anybody that knows Clayton knows that he's a workhorse and knows that he's going to go out there and give it everything he has, even when he's not feeling well. So his MO is that he does above and beyond for this organization. So I don't think Dodger fans are out there looking at, oh, he's taking this as, you know, I'm shutting it down from a business standpoint. I think it's legitimate, number one. Let's be clear about that. It's definitely legitimate. But at the same time, I'm not going to put a less product out there when I know I can get healthy and go for it. Science! Kershaw is 1-4 on the season with a 2.86 ERA, has not pitched beyond the seventh inning, and has allowed 7 home runs so far this season. Science! Dodgers have scored 2 or less runs in 4 of his 7 starts. Science! Kershaw is averaging 91.85 miles per hour on his fastball this season, per Brooks Baseball, a career low and about a mile and a half slower than last season, which was 93.21 miles per hour. Science! He has spent time on the DL in each of the past 3 seasons and 4 of the last 5. This is his first stint involving an arm injury. Science! The Dodgers' record the last 2 years while Kershaw has been on the DL, they were 38-25 in 2016, and they were 24-10 last year. Science!
Well, if you look at the numbers, maybe give him a rest. It's fine.
There you go. They still win when he's out. So, I mean, it's not panic time just because he's out. They certainly want him in the lineup, but certainly not panic time.
You know, what we saw in Monterey when they played the Padres.
Monterey.
Is that this team is consistently inconsistent.
Oh, my goodness.
Four players combined on a no-hitter. Great moment.
Great moment.
What a great
moment. Starting with Walker Buehler, which had a fantastic outing. I love this kid. I'm glad he's going to get the opportunity to really be here on a regular basis.
All right, so there's the good news. Then they drop 2 of 3 to the Padres.
Yeah.
How in the world does that happen?
How does that happen?
How do you combine on a no-hitter against one of the worst teams in baseball and then drop 2 of 3?
You know what I felt, Fred? I should have said something. I didn't tweet. I didn't do the social media thing. But I felt really uncomfortable after that first game. They had that combined no-hitter. And then you see them in the locker room, they're pouring, you know, they're doing the champagne and the water and dousing the guys that pitched and having a good celebration. And then they come out and lose the next 2. It's like, oh, we're still struggling, guys. I mean, great, it's a no-hitter. Celebrate
that. That really struck you?
It did. It bothered me. It really did. It bothered me that we're at this point of the season, and I get the no-hitter thing, celebrate it on the field, but to go back and then into the locker room and do like you won the NL West, you know what I mean, or somebody threw a perfect game, it was a little much for me, given where they are in the season right now and given what's happening with them. And I know, you know, in Mexico, let's celebrate, let's let our hair down. It's a great, you know, PR and whole deal trip, but it just it felt odd that given the struggles that the Dodgers had, that they were going and celebrating like that.
Come on,
and then
Rob.
After that.
How many years have the Dodgers been around?
After that, then they go lose 2 more after that.
Dodgers been around for what, over 100 years?
And?
Not once in the history of their franchise did they pitch a combined no-hitter. That was worth celebrating.
No.
Plus, they had such a crappy first 6 weeks. I think they were letting a lot of frustration out on Friday night.
And then that frustration turned into losses the next 2 days.
But I thought that was a really cool deal. A combined no-hitter?
The actual event and what happened was a very cool deal. Absolutely. But to take it to a little bit of the next level in a regular season game and, you know, do the champagne and the beer pouring and the dousing of all that in the locker room, it just felt a little weird to me. Given the season that they're having right now, given the struggles that they're having, it was like, is that something we should be doing, you know, at that moment? It's like we're not 25-3 and just rolling, and then this was an add-on, or like last year when they went on that roll and they kept winning games, you know, at crazy ways in the ninth inning. I was all for that, but to have the struggles that they're having, and given, yes, it was a no-hitter, and now listen, if Walker Buehler went the distance and it was a no-hitter, then I'm all for it. Hey, go for it. But four combined guys having a no-hitter, yeah, it's great, but not cause for that kind of celebration to me.
Well, when they really want to celebrate is tomorrow, Wednesday. They got Arizona coming to town.
Yeah, there you go.
And, you know, given the way the schedule is, they're seeing them an awful lot early on. And this is when you can make games up. This is when you can start affecting the division standings.
Yeah.
So they've got to beat Arizona. Dodger fans, all right. So really, given what happened over the weekend, Kershaw on the DL, the combined no-hitter, yet they go 2-3, lose 2-3 against the Padres. Let's look at it like this today for BJ's. Let's do this today. All right, we've laid out what the issues are. But there's got to be something that you're optimistic about. Got to be something. I'll give you an idea right now. Soon, everybody will come off the DL.
Soon.
Justin Turner will be back.
Puig
will be back. Forsyth will be back. So soon, people are coming off the DL.
The Bishop will be back.
The Bishop. Bishop's going to work this week. So what are you optimistic about? When you look at it and you go, okay, well, it's been slow and we've struggled, but this is the thing that puts a smile on my face. Yeah. This is the thing that makes me think, no, they'll be fine.
Yeah, and here's my thing too, Fred, is that as long as you stay, and that's why I think the Monterey trip was important. Yes, it was a goodwill trip. It was great for Major League Baseball. The visuals were great. I watched, you know, over the weekend, and I enjoyed everything that was going on. Fernando being celebrated down there was incredible. But also business needed to be taken care of, and they didn't do that down there where they could have made up some ground. It was an opportunity to get that done. And now you got to come back and play the Diamondbacks. And the one thing that concerns me is, even though baseball is such a long season, you don't want to fall too far back.
Right.
Especially when you're getting ready to play the team that's leading your division. And then what is too far back where you're playing so much catch up that it's hard to kind of focus on the big picture or the day to day because you keep looking up and you're 9 games, 10 games, 12 games behind. And then you start to get that mindset in. I mean, we'll ask Ned about that, but that's the concern to me, is that they get too far in a hole that they're constantly trying to dig themselves out.
All right. So Dodger fans, what reason do you have to be optimistic? Listening to Rodney? None. But nonetheless, I'm sure there are some that exist.
Look at you flip the script on me now.
Hey, I am Mr. Hope. 866-987-2570, your best 30-second take. Get you a $100 gift card to BJ's Restaurant and Brewhouse, over 140 menu items, 50 craft beers, the one-of-a-kind Pizookie dessert, and you know, on Mondays, half-off large pizza, $4 Brewhouse margaritas. Dodger fans, what do you have to be optimistic about? 12:30. You'll be the smartest person in the room. Coming up next, we'll take your calls, and Ned Colletti will join us. Fred Rogan and Rodney Pete on AM 570 LA Sports. You know, every time I hear it, I say thank you. Thank you. That was so nice of you.
Well, you know, I feel like the partnership, Fred, is moving in the right direction. We continue to grow. And let's just grow, Fred. Let's just grow.
Let's grow.
Let's move on now, though.
Dodger fans, what are you optimistic about? It is not all gloom and doom. Buddy in Rancho Cucamonga, you're on AM 570 LA Sports. Go ahead.
Well, what am I optimistic about? Number one, Walker Buehler. Number two, when the guys get back off the DL, we're going to have a fantastic lineup with the addition of Matt Kemp. We got Turner, we got Matt Kemp, we got Bellinger, we got Puig, to name a few. We're going to have a great lineup, and it's just a matter of us getting hot and winning it all. I'm out.
Oh, you got in. I thought you were going to be over.
You made it.
I thought you were going
to
be over.
He made it. No, he's right. You know, and a guy that doesn't get, he's getting some credit, but not a whole lot, is Matt Kemp, who's been able to really solidify that lineup and be consistent so far this season. I think sometimes, people don't really realize sometimes how you take a Justin Turner out of the lineup, especially from offensively, what it does to the entire lineup, because he's the leader and he's been so effective over the years. So when he comes back, I think I am optimistic about that.
John and Diamond Bar, you're on AM 570 LA Sports. Go ahead.
Dodger fans, a lot to be optimistic about. We got a team in the LA area that has a player, a Hall of Fame player with 3,000 hits, 600 home runs, soon to be the all-time RBI leader. They're in first place, by the way. They have a two-time MVP who's having another MVP year. And we have the Japanese Babe Ruth, Shohei Ohtani, feeling you, Vic, on our team. What's not to be optimistic about?
All right, well, that's fine.
Over, guys.
John, that's fine.
He took that opportunity to go dig, didn't he?
Yeah, that's fine if we were talking about the Angels. But we're not, John. We were asking about...
Wait, do you think he knew that, or you think he was about L.A., this L.A. optimistic? You think he just took a dig at the Dodgers?
Maybe.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, maybe. Nice try, though, John. Oscar and Glendale, go ahead.
Yeah, injuries are not always a bad thing. Sometimes it takes someone to go down to rise up. And the thing that I'm optimistic about is our farm system. You know, we had Seager 2 years ago, last year Bellinger. So if Buehler, who's off to a good start, gets on fire, or Verdugo, we're going to blow this thing up this year, baby. That's what I'm optimistic about. Bye.
All right, baby, you're going to blow it up.
Blow it up.
Blow it up, baby.
Blow it up,
baby. Let's go. Let's go.
Can you dig it?
We can dig it.
Yeah, brothers.
We can dig it. Can you dig $1,000, $1,000 in your hand?
And check this out. If you got a text to try to win, you got to answer the phone. Answer the phone. It may be blocked, maybe unknown. You don't recognize it. Answer the phone. That's the only way we put a grand in your hand.
Let's get the take of the man who knows far more than anybody. Ned Coletti joins us now. Ned, thanks for jumping on.
You're welcome, gentlemen.
All right, let's start with Clayton Kershaw. Does your heart jump into your throat when you hear he's going to see Neil Eletrosh?
Yeah, I mean, they're friends, but you never like to see them when they got business to discuss, you know? It's for Clayton to go out, you know, it's got to be something that he can't deal with. Dave Roberts said that he had pitched through it before. I'm sure most people do pitch through it at some point in time. But when you can't pitch through it anymore, that's not necessarily a good sign. Hopefully it's just going to take medication and rest to bring him back.
Hey, Ned, do you think this is something that's been going on? I mean, obviously he had a slow start, and, you know, velocity was off a little bit. Do you think this is something that Kershaw was trying to just fight through, and inevitably it just became too much, and they got to go on the DL?
I wouldn't be surprised. You know, it's we've noticed that his velocity has been down a couple miles an hour on his fastball. That is usually a telltale sign, as well as, and I haven't really checked the spin rate, but when the spin rate changes too, that's also another telltale sign. Typically when guys have this, and it's just a rest and medication type of procedure, you're talking about 4 or 5 weeks. Now, they have not set a timeline for this. You can go back. Phil Hughes had this 4 or 5 weeks, was out. King Felix up north had the thing. So it could be that long. It could be shorter. The main thing is that it's not a precursor to something more serious down the road, because this part of your body is attached to your labrum, and obviously that's a word you never want to hear. But hopefully this is just something that they can calm down with some anti-inflammatories, some rest, and let him build back his arm strength and get back after it.
Yeah, because the thing is, Ned, and you know, you heard whispers, he just doesn't look right. That doesn't mean he's not good, but he just, from the beginning, didn't look right this year.
Yeah, I agree. You know, the game against Washington, the first inning, they kind of ambushed him early. And whether they could read a tendency or a sequence that he had gotten comfortable with, if you remember that first inning, you know, they did a little bit of damage right then and there. And then the game where he walked the six hitters, he just didn't look comfortable out there. It looked like he was almost on a brand-new mound, and he wasn't on a brand-new mound. He's on the mound he's most familiar with. And I think those two things kind of put a little red flag in my mind, and I was waiting to see what it would look like, you know, going forward after that. And when he walked six guys, you know something's up. This guy had seasons where the 18-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio of gigantic historic proportion. And so when he's losing his command and it looks like he's fighting himself a little bit to maybe find his delivery or maybe trying to find a comfortable spot inside that delivery, is a sign that, you know, that he needs some attention here.
Yeah, I mean, the last few years we've talked about his back. This is the first time it's been his arm.
Yes.
So and the age factor kind of comes into play. Are we seeing the downward turn of Clayton Kershaw and age becoming a real factor, and we have to come to grips with this?
I think it's too early to go there right now. When you watch him pitch, and he's got three great pitches that are as good as any fastball, as good as any slider, as good as any curveball in the game. I think you'll start to perhaps see an evolution to adding a changeup to it. And I think that he'll continue to evolve as a pitcher. Will he be the same pitcher he was 5 years ago? Probably not. None of us will be the same we were athletically or anyway we were 5 years ago. So I do think that there is transition. I'm not sure he's there yet, but the way he does pitch, there is room for yet another pitch in there, which will at some point in time make that fastball look another 2 or 3 miles an hour quicker in the event that it stays at a couple miles less than it has been the last 2 or 3 years. So I don't think we're seeing the other end of the slope here. I think we're seeing maybe just an injury. Maybe he hasn't been right all season, and therefore we're seeing that. He does have a lot of innings on him. You're talking about somebody who is not only the ace but the workhorse of the staff. So there's a lot of different things, but there is still that extra pitch in there, that changeup, which once he decides that is going to be part of a consistent repertoire, now suddenly you've got yet another pitch that, knowing him, he'll be able to throw it with great arm speed, which is really the key to that pitch, and to be able to run it away to right-handed hitters while he runs a slider inside to him. So a lot more to come for him, I believe.
All right, Ned. So I think the way, and I mentioned this earlier, to sum up the Dodgers, they are consistently inconsistent this year. They got out of Mexico, four guys combined on a no-hitter, which is great. Then they dropped 2 of 3 to the Padres, which is not great. What Dodger team should we expect to see on a nightly basis?
Well, that's a great question, and you're right. It is an inconsistency that's been consistent with, and they lose a couple games to Miami, a team that is, you know, going to lose probably 100 games this year. San Diego, we've kind of had our way with them for quite a while now, to lose 2 out of 3 after holding them hitless the first time around. I think when you have as many players on the DL as you have, and you've got 3/4 of the infield that's out. You've got the second baseman out, the shortstop, who's not coming back till next season probably, and the third baseman, who may be a week or two away. You got 3/4 of your infield out. You got a right fielder who's one of your best defensive players, one of the best defensive players in the game, hit 28 jacks last year. You've got a lot of guys out of that lineup. So inconsistency is, you can expect it, because not everybody's got 18 or 15 position players, 14 position players, 13 position players that are all stars, that are all equal. And I think that's part of the inconsistency. You've got 4 key guys out of that lineup on a daily basis. That's a lot. 4 is a lot. Thank goodness Matt Kemp is here.
No, absolutely. He's been very, very productive. That being said, Ned, how far is too far? You know, we're going to get these guys back other than Seager. And how far do you slip before it becomes a real concern? Because you got the Diamondbacks coming in again, who are red hot. You don't want to get too far behind before these guys come back. So when it becomes critical, when does it become critical?
Well, if we were this far back, at the All-Star break or after the All-Star break, yeah, I mean that's miles from now, and you're probably thinking, oh my God, we can't wait that long. But we've seen it happen. We've seen it happen almost annually to some team. As long as these guys get healthy and they don't rush back and they stay with the process that they had a year ago, where they really worked pitching. They really worked, especially the inferior pitching. That was a little bit disappointing to watch the two kids that pitched for San Diego on Saturday and Sunday, who are not known for having great command of the fastball or a lot of big league experience. And we weren't necessarily as patient as we could have been. And I think that is a key to to the success of this club. Think about last year. They just hammered on below-average pitching. A guy couldn't throw strikes. They would wait him out. He'd get in the 50-pitch range about the third inning, and next thing you know, CT3 come back around, and here they go. And that's how this team plays best, and they got to get a little bit more patient with it, I think. And some of it is when you miss all these hitters in your lineup, everybody else thinks they got to do everything all at once. So I do think it's still not a time to get too exaggerated by it or too over the top on it. I think there's still a lot of time. If this was the full team, if this was how they were playing, and everybody had been healthy the entire year, I still don't think I'd be worried about where they sit right now. Arizona's going to hit their downtime too. That's coming. They got Robbie Ray out for 5 or 6 more weeks. They got Walker out. He's out for the year. They got their issues too as time goes on. And one thing that they've only done once in the last period of time is win one time. Dodgers win 5 in a row. Dodgers know the pace of the season and know how to get it done by the time you get to the end. So be a few more months before I start to get concerned about where they're at.
All right, then I'm not concerned. If you're not concerned,
I wouldn't be concerned yet, you know?
You know? Wow, man, that's not a whole lot of people can do that to Fred. Now he's not concerned. You know, he's Mr. Panic, you know.
You got all these players out. I mean, how do you expect them to be, you know, sitting next to Arizona when you've had so many guys out and coming off the year that they had? I'm telling you, Kenley Jansen and now Corey's out, but neither guy had a full spring training. And we all say it's too long and all the rest of this stuff, but it is there for a reason. And the Dodgers were wise in letting Kenley kind of take it easy during the camp, because it doesn't matter what his command is in March or really even maybe early April, as much as it's going to matter September and October. This guy's pitched a lot of games, a lot of big games, always takes the ball. 8th inning, give me the ball. I'll take it. I'll get you 4 outs, 5 outs, 6 outs if we have to. So you've got to really look at the long-range plan. A lot of people look at today and only today, and I get that philosophy too. But when you are leading an organization, or you're the manager or the pitching coach or the hitting coach, or you've got decisions to make, the long view with talent will almost always win out. And that's what they've done. They've got the long view with talent. So you're going to have to, if you believe in the talent, and it's tough not to after 104 wins last year, and really you got Seager out, but basically it's the same group, plus Matt Kemp. They got the talent, so you got to play the long game, and you got to realize that your process is going to have to be pure when you get everybody back, and then you put a run on.
See, I was saying, honest to God, the exact same thing to Rodney earlier this morning. The exact same thing.
Can I get that on tape?
Let's get that on tape.
Ned, thanks for jumping on as always. We appreciate it.
All right, boys. Have a good one.
You too, Ned. See, Ned and I are completely in sync.
Yeah, you are. I love Ned because he's always in the big chair and makes you feel good, right? You can just like put the fire on and let Ned tell your stories, and he brings the real to you, and you feel better after you talk to Ned.
Yeah, and the thing about Ned, he always tells the truth.
Yes.
He never sugarcoats anything.
Yes, he does.
He talks about it from the perspective of the guy that makes the decisions.
Yeah.
It's great to have him on. Barbecues Galore. Barbecues Galore is the place to go for all your backyard entertainment needs, like grills, smokers, outdoor kitchens, patio furniture, and more. Barbecues Galore, not a barbecue aisle.
A barbecue
friend.
Store!
It is a barbecue store. Who's the smartest person in the room?
Daddy.
Is it real?
They're real, and they're spectacular.
Or fake news.
Fake.
Joining us today to compete with Rodney Peet. In a return appearance, Diana Olea.
Olea.
Get him right, Diana. Get him right. Olea, Fred. Diana Olea.
Hey, he got the Diana right. Yeah. I'm proud of
Olea.
You.
Olea.
I'll take that one. Olea. I told Fred the wrong one.
Oh.
My bad. Sorry.
Oh.
You know, Diana.
Way to fall on the sword, Jason. That a boy. Take that. Take it.
And he wasn't the only one. But Diana, let me say this.
What's
Diana
that?
Olea.
Tell me.
Given that I butchered it the first time as well,
mm-hmm.
I specifically walked in because we love hearing you. You have the most pleasant voice.
And
you do such a terrific job. And I asked both of them. I said, I'm not going to do it again. By the way, the first time, they also told me the wrong thing.
Diana.
So now we know.
Diana,
how dare them.
Diana, this is Rodney. They didn't ask me. I would have told them.
Think of it like, you know, like the bullfighters. Olea.
Yeah.
Olea.
Olea.
See?
I knew that.
That's
they didn't
what I
ask
need.
Me, though, Diana.
And it
they
is
didn't
a,
ask me.
It is a Spanish name.
I need word association.
That's what I meant, Fred. I was just testing you is all it was.
There's your word association.
All right.
A little Spanish bullfighter.
I listen to you, Diana, all the time. That's how I know.
All right, let's see.
Thank you. I listen to you every day.
Thank you.
You guys want to continue, or should we just start here,
Roger? No, that was it. Now
Love Fest over.
Now I'm about to beat you down. Now I'm about to kill you right here.
All
now,
right,
I'm about to, now I'm about to win it. I'm about to win it, and I might go undefeated right here.
Here we go. Raptor guard Fred VanVleet doesn't give a bleep about the hashtag LeBronto hashtag on social media. NBA fans have had some fun with the Raptors on social media calling the city of Toronto LeBronto because LeBron owns the team. When asked how he feels about the online joke, Raptors' Fred VanVleet said, "How do I feel about it? I don't really give an F." Rodney, is that real or fake?
Yeah, after the way they've been humiliated by LeBron James, and they had the best record in the East and number one seed and all that kind of stuff, and now they're down on the brink of elimination, I'm sure they're all frustrated, so I don't doubt that he said that exactly. I'm going to go real.
Diana.
I'm going to go real just because I think he just really doesn't give a blank.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. We're off and rolling.
Clippers player won big on his Kentucky Derby wager. Clippers' Wesley Johnson was at Santa Anita Saturday at a Kentucky Derby party. He made an off-track exacta wager on the horses Justify and Good Magic to come in first and second in the Derby. His bet paid him over $10,000, according to his brother. Diana, is that real or fake?
I'm going to go real. I'm going to go real. I think, why not? He's got the money to put some money down, and yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I watched that Kentucky Derby in the rain. I like it. Wesley Johnson going down to Santa Anita and making a bet. I'm going to go fake.
You're going fake?
Yeah.
You sure?
I think so.
It's all fake news. It's phony stuff.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Turn it.
That's how I do. I take the lead early.
And I had needed to pay attention that you said went down to Santa Anita himself to place the bet. Yeah.
Ah,
I missed that part.
All right. Details, okay. Details.
Yes.
Details.
Saturday Live
Olea.
Sketch.
Olea.
Fun. Olea. Olea. Saturday Live Sketch making fun of LeBron James and the Cavs was left on the cutting room floor Saturday. Donald Glover was the host and musical guest as Childish Gambino. This weekend on Saturday Night Live, Glover and the cast did a sketch that made fun of LeBron and his teammates called The Other Cavs. The sketch was cut for time, didn't make it to air, but was released as a digital short instead and went viral yesterday. Rodney, is that real or fake?
Oh, man. I had my phone off yesterday all day, and I didn't really get a chance to look at any social media. But it sounds like Saturday Night Live is right there, M.O. LeBron's been carrying the team. They're right on the cutting edge of what's happening right now. So, but the question is, was it real that they did it and got it's on the cutting room floor?
But they released it as a digital short.
A digital short.
And Diana, well,
yes,
go ahead,
sir.
Rodney. Go ahead, Rodney.
Oh,
answer.
No, that was going to be a hint.
No. I'm going to say something to Diana.
I bet you are. I bet you are.
I'm going to say something.
All right, I'm going to go real. Yeah, real.
Okay. Diana?
Yes.
We heard you typing. Really?
Oh, no! Diana.
Diana,
are you serious?
I heard you doing that.
Are you
doing
looking
what?
It up right now?
I'm
as
just
I was
sitting
answering
here
the
listening
question?
To you guys.
You're typing up and going and searching while I'm answering the question?
Not at all. I'm listening intently to all the details.
Olea, come on.
Olea. All right, Diana, you know the answer. What is it?
I don't know the answer because I wasn't on social media this weekend either. But I think it's probably funny enough that they went ahead and released it. So I think it's real.
Okay,
everybody knows about LeBron.
But don't forget about us,
the other Cavaliers. And whatever LeBron needs, we'll get it done.
As long as what he needs isn't basketball.
But we've got everything else covered.
Every time LeBron makes a free throw, I'm right there with that high five like, there you go, LeBron.
I hold LeBron's third and fourth cell phones. I sweep up LeBron's chalk. I run the pick and roll. That's when I pick up LeBron's laundry and roll it on over to his house.
And we're the other Cleveland Cavaliers.
So we all just want to say, thanks, LeBron.
Thanks, LeBron.
Thanks, Bron.
Thanks, LeBron.
Ah. Good, good. I can't believe they didn't air that.
I know.
It was hysterical. You've got to look it up.
I mean, I'm going to have to look it up.
Really you already funny. Did. You already did.
Well, you tried. All right. Last one. Olaya. Last one. Former ESPN reporter Britt McHenry tells Redskins cheerleaders, if you don't want to be treated like a sex object, perhaps don't be one. Former ESPN reporter has been outspoken since her days at ESPN, retweeted a New York Times article about the Redskins cheerleaders being used to entertain clients by the team. She wrote, I'll get crushed for this, but let's be serious. These women dance in glorified bras and underwear in a field for male entertainment. If you don't want to be treated like a sex object, perhaps don't be one for money. Diana, is that real or fake?
I'm going to go with real, because I think some women really feel pretty strongly like that, and I could see an ESPN reporter saying something like that.
Rodney.
Yeah, given the trip to Costa Rica that they just came back from, there's a lot of heat around the Redskins cheerleaders and cheerleaders in general. So, yeah, I believe she said that. I think that's real.
Nice.
Well, Diana, good try today.
Good try, Diana.
We're tied.
No. Daddy's up one.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah. I'm up one.
Yeah, Daddy. Yeah. Apparently, Daddy is up one.
Yes, I'm up one.
I don't think so.
No, yeah. You lost the first one. You lost the first one, and we tied on the other ones. It's all good. You know, even though Fred butchered your name.
I was ready to eviscerate you today, Rodney.
You know what, Diana? Come back later in the week.
All right.
Yeah, come back later in the week. You get a chance to save face.
All right, you got it. I'm in.
Thanks, Diana.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, a couple more BJ's questions. Dodger fans, what do you have to be optimistic about? Chris in L.A., go ahead.
Hey, guys, I'm not optimistic. I'm a realist. 8 games out, they've given us nothing to make us think they're going to win, and they're happy about a team no-hitter. The only reason it's been never been a no-hitter in Dodger history because most managers know to leave your guy in after the seventh inning. So I'm not optimistic.
Boy, that hurt.
Ooh, that, wow.
A little dark.
Yeah.
A little dark on that one.
Guys early. He's kind of jabbing at Dave Roberts for taking guys out.
Yeah, well.
Wow.
I don't know why he
before the All-Star break. You can't let him go complete games. What's
really?
Wrong?
Really?
No, you can't.
Huh. All right, Scott in Simi Valley, go ahead.
Hey, Rogan, Roddy, what's up, guys?
What's up? Go ahead. Go. You got 30 seconds. Hurt.
No problem. So people underestimate the regularity that getting almost your entire starting roster brings back, especially Justin Turner, who hit 400 last April, last season. So sometimes this season it's looked like there's been a Triple-A lineup actually in the big league. So getting these guys back from the DL hopefully will provide a spark and we'll see somewhat of what we saw last season. But, I mean, maybe that'll take some pressure off the bullpen and they can write the
too long.
Oh, I tried to give you a hint, too.
Yeah, tried to help.
Tried to help you.
All right. Let me give you two names, Dodger fans. Tell me what these mean to you. Justin Bour and Lucas Duda. Think about that. Well, Award BJ's coming back. We'll explain who those two are. Fred Rogan and Rodney Pete on AM 570 LA Sports. Fred Rogan and Rodney Pete on AM 570 LA Sports. Next hour, Shaq has some interesting thoughts on LeBron James and Paul George coming to Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. We'll get into that. Let me give you two names. Justin Bour and Lucas Duda. All right. I say those two names and you say?
I say why.
You say why. So apparently you know who they are?
I do. I do know who they are. First baseman. Pretty good hitters. Bour plays for Miami, right?
Right.
And where's Duda nowadays?
I think he's in Kansas City.
Kansas City, yeah. Good hitters. Why are you bringing it up, Fred?
Well, there's a report today that if the Dodgers were to go out and try to make a move, let's say they decide we got to do something, rather than make a run at Manny Machado, who makes $16 million
mm-hmm.
and would put them over the threshold once again, the luxury tax threshold, they may be more inclined to go out and get a first baseman like Justin Bour, who makes $3.4 million, or Lucas Duda, who I believe went to USC.
Yes, he did.
And makes $3.5 million. And you go, well, now, if they go out and get a first baseman, what are they going to do with Cody Bellinger? And the feeling is they would move him to center field.
Oh, I was going to say, you're going to move him out or trade him. No, no, no. So you're saying moving him to the outfield and bring one of these guys that are natural first basemans in. And I don't know. I just don't know. It just goes to the panic button to me again. I just don't know if you do that. Ready? We got guys coming off the DL. We've been talking about it in the first hour about guys coming off the DL. And if we can get some guys healthy and have a healthy lineup for an extended period of time, more than a week, we may be able to change this and turn this around. But to take Cody, who's now found a home at first base, and move him back to the outfield, I don't know.
See, I don't
like
that.
I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan.
I'm not a fan of that either. But despite the fact neither one of us are fans of that, that's how the Dodgers operate. It's kind of positionless. So we can move you to center field.
Right.
And then we'll go out and get a first baseman that can hit, provide some pop. This is if we need to. This is, okay, you got to do something. Rather than making a run at Machado, who makes all of that money.
Right, but here's your thing, Fred. Like you always bring up, you know, and not that these guys are actually the name game guys. You're not playing a name game with
Machado. No, not
Machado.
With these guys.
Machado, you would play the name game a little bit. But do you move just for the sake of moving, just to get new faces in here to try to change it up? Because, you know, as we've seen over the years, the Dodgers and their system and the way guys come up has been the best in baseball. Of guys that we didn't hear about, nobody knew about unless you're really in tune to the Dodgers organization. You don't hear about them, but when they come up, they produced. And so do we stay with that philosophy, or do we go out and say, oh, my God, we're going to push the panic button before the All-Star break and sign these guys and move Bellinger to the outfield? I don't know. I'm not a fan.
I'm not a fan of moving Bellinger to the outfield. First of all, I think he's just fine where he is. You might remember the last time he played the outfield.
Yeah.
He hurt
his ankle.
Right. And that wasn't a good thing.
In right field. Absolutely.
So there's no reason to move him. But what they're saying here is they would approach this like they approach everything. And it not necessarily go out and play
the name game.
What they would do is go out and get a guy they think can supply some pop and put him at first and move Bellinger to center field. You still get the hitting. You still got the pop, but to do so, you've got to move Bellinger. And I guess what I'm saying is, I don't know if I would be comfortable taking a guy at first base who is so effective there and moving him to center field.
A young star who you brought up last year, you know, moved all around last year, did whatever you wanted him to do last year, playing center field, playing right field. As you mentioned, got hurt playing right field. But a natural position is first base. Do you move that guy? Because a lot of times, you know, regardless of what you do at the plate, there is a relationship between what you do in the field. When you're playing in the infield and you're in it, it helps you at the plate. And I know it sounds weird, but the position that you play in the field definitely relates to what you do when you're hitting. So I think he's comfortable playing first base, and why mess with that? Because he is a big bat in your lineup, so let's not change that up. Let's do something different.
All right, Jason, who won BJ's today?
Well, we asked listeners, what are you optimistic about this Dodger team? I like Oscar and Glendale's attitude.
Yeah, injuries are not always a bad thing. Sometimes it takes someone to go down to rise up. And the thing that I'm optimistic about is our farm system. You know, we had Seager 2 years ago, last year Bellinger. So if Buehler, who's off to a good start, gets on fire, or Verdugo, we're going to blow this thing up this year, baby. That's what I'm optimistic about.
That's it, baby. We're going to blow it up. Oscar and Glendale, you've won a $100 gift card to BJ's Restaurant and Brewhouse on Monday. Half off large pizzas, $4 Brewhouse margaritas. Wherever you are and whatever you do, there is a BJ's Restaurant and Brewhouse near you. All right, there seems to be a train of thought that LeBron James, however this season plays out, is going to Philadelphia. Although there is someone you know very well that disagrees. We'll explain. Fred Rogan and Rodney Peete on AM 570 LA Sports. Fred Rogan and Rodney Peete on AM 570 LA Sports. Kevin, what's coming up at 1:30?
Well, news came out earlier today, Fred, that one NBA head coach is out in Detroit
We have a local head coach that could be staying for much longer than many people expected.
Oh, that's not a surprise. I think there's only two teams in L.A.
And Luke Walton's not going anywhere.
I could be talking about the Defenders or something. You don't know, Rodney.
Oh, okay.
They're a basketball team, too.
Just checking.
The Agua Caliente Clippers.
Agua Caliente. There you go.
That's right. Of Morongo, or whatever they're called.
Right.
Agua Caliente. Don't mix them up, Fred.
No, they're the Agua Caliente Clippers.
Yes, Agua Caliente.
That's a casino, too.
I know, but they're of something, like Ontario or something, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
I understand.
Why?
All right. Anyway, so the NBA playoffs, you know, continue down the road. I was wrong, and I think Rodney was wrong as well.
I was right.
Now, I think you were wrong in this situation, because I said the train was going to come off the tracks for LeBron James. One can't beat five. Not going to happen.
I said LeBron could do it.
No, you didn't.
I did.
But the point is this. Whether you said it or not, which you didn't.
I did.
It's very difficult in the NBA for one guy to beat five. And even though LeBron has had some help in this series against Toronto, it speaks to Toronto is really like little teeny-weeny baby dinosaurs, and LeBron is the man.
They're not quite Raptors?
They're not quite Raptors. They're Raps.
Yeah.
They're the Raps. It's mind-boggling.
It owns them.
To consider how good he is. It is absolutely mind-boggling. So next up, you'll have Cleveland and Boston playing in the Eastern Final.
How great is that, though? Obviously, it would have been even better if Kyrie was playing, because then you have it scripted the way Hollywood would love it to be scripted. But the fact that Boston is playing this well without Kyrie Irving, it's incredible. I mean, it goes to Brad Stevens being one of the best, if not the best coaches in the NBA.
Yeah, he gets it. And what you're going to really have now is one guy playing against a team.
Yeah.
Because the Celtics are a team, and Cleveland is one guy. It's LeBron James. So let's say it goes south, and the one guy can't beat the next five. And LeBron has to make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There is a feeling, a train of thought, and Chris Broussard has shared this with us, and Chris knows his stuff, that the perfect landing spot for him would be, and James Worthy said it as well, Philadelphia. Now, there are those that believe that will stunt the growth of Ben Simmons. I'm not in that camp. I think it's going to be fine. Your objective is to win NBA titles. And if you put LeBron James on that Philadelphia team, I think they become an instant contender. I think they win while he is still capable and vital. And then I think as he gets a little older, Simmons and Joel Embiid have developed, and they win more. I think that is a perfect landing spot for LeBron James.
Yeah, and the whole theory that Ben Simmons can't adjust to LeBron James coming to Philadelphia because he has to have a ball in his hand, LeBron has the ball in his hand, and now, you know, how do they do that? It's going to stunt the growth of Ben Simmons? No. LeBron James is a guy that's going to make people around him better, and for a young team like that, and it's been thrown out there by Chris Broussard that LeBron is – you know, looking to play more off the ball, would love to have a point guard that can just control the ball and get him the ball when he needs it instead of him controlling the ball from 90 feet. So it could be a great situation. But to suggest that it will stunt the growth of these young kids, especially Ben Simmons, is ludicrous.
All right. So if, in fact, Philadelphia, really, if you're trying to win at this point in his career, if you want to win titles at this point in his career, is the best place to go, that would make Laker fans unhappy. Because by watching him, we all know he's not too old.
Oh,
he's not lost much.
Far from it.
And he's going to lead you really into the conversation about being a champion.
You know what's funny about that, Fred? Is that nobody is even thinking that he may stay in Cleveland. I mean, everybody's got the other spots. They got him going to Philadelphia. They got him going to the Lakers. They got him going to possibly, I heard a report that he may even end up in Boston, you know, Clippers maybe. I mean, they got him everywhere but staying in Cleveland. And if Cleveland goes to the finals, well, they're going to go to the Eastern Conference Finals, but if they go to the finals, do you really rule out Cleveland keeping him there?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah, I do. And I rule it out.
So if they go and lose to the Warriors, and he's gone, or lose to anybody, he's gone. What if they go and win it? Is he gone?
You know, I have to tell you, Rodney, if they win it, it's because of him. He is a one-man band.
Absolutely.
And I think it's just too taxing and physically demanding. Well, I don't think it can
happen. I don't think it can happen. He can't beat. I don't think he couldn't beat the Rockets or the Warriors if they get to the finals. There's no way he can do that. Well, I shouldn't say no way, because there's a remote chance when you're talking about LeBron James. But I don't think they win regardless of who they play. But to suggest that there's no way for him to stay in Cleveland, you're saying that's a foregone conclusion. He's out.
I think he's gone. I do. I think this season has been horrifically taxing on him and just so exhausting. And he's up for a challenge. He loves it. He wants to succeed. But why would you continue to run headfirst into a brick wall?
Yeah, at his age.
Right. I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
I've got, you know, regardless of how he's had the best season of his career, he played all 82 games. It's incredible at his age to be able to do what he's doing, having the most efficient postseason that he's ever had. But at the same time, you got to look at it from his perspective. It's like, okay, I did have a great season, but still, father time is father time. And at some point, I got to get to a situation where I can win one or two more. And so I get your point saying he doesn't believe that can happen in Cleveland, but maybe they go out and find one more guy that helps them in Cleveland that keeps them there.
They haven't. And no. Shaq doesn't think they will either, because despite the fact that many people believe his landing spot would be Philadelphia, Shaq is of the opinion that his landing spot is going to be right here.
I think Paul George moves
himself. Paul George will move himself. He's a free agent.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
He's definitely going to
LA. He's not
going
to stick around.
He's going to the Lakers?
Him and LeBron.
Or the Clippers?
Him and LeBron.
I think they're going to be Lakers.
You heard it here first.
Okay, we got breaking news.
Yeah, well, this is the Shaq.
You know, it's not breaking news. I'm just saying this is just my opinion.
All right, that's from Shaq's podcast. Mm-hmm. You buy that?
That's a tall order. And he's saying that both he and Paul George are coming to the Lakers. I still think that it depends on how this finishes out, because Cleveland, after they've been written off since the All-Star break and even back in January when they were struggling and LeBron can't do it, no supporting cast. By the way, Kevin Love has been playing his you-know-what off in this series and the series before. So,
well, he hasn't gotten hurt yet.
Yeah, well, that is true, but he's been playing extremely well. I just don't know if they get it to the finals or get to the finals, does he leave? Does LeBron leave? And again, it would take two to get LeBron here. Both him and Paul George, or him and Kawhi, or him and someone else, he's not coming alone.
All right, so if you take two and you put him here, is that team going to be more appealing than the current 76er team?
To me, yeah, absolutely. Because they're very similar, very young talent, great talent around him from a young perspective. I think the key figures in Philadelphia are better than the key figures from a young standpoint in L.A. When you're talking about, you know, Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball, and you're talking about Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, it's more attractive to go to Philadelphia, but then you got to factor in, obviously, the L.A. situation, being a Laker, being in L.A., all the things he wants to finish out and do after his career. But bringing a championship to L.A. as opposed to Philadelphia, L.A. would do wonders for him, more so than I think Philadelphia would.
You know, I don't see it that way.
No?
No, I do not see it that way. I think titles mean titles. I don't think it means any more if he wins here than he wins in Philadelphia. I think Philadelphia is a great sports town. I don't want Laker fans upset. But I'm just saying, if you look at it realistically, I think if he wins with that Sixer team.
Come on now. You know, Shaq still to this day regrets leaving on the way he left L.A.
Well, he shouldn't have.
Oh, yeah. He shouldn't have left. And that the friction, he let the ego and all the friction between him and Kobe get in the middle of it. And, you know, Kobe was a young gun, so they stuck with him. But Shaq let his ego and all that kind of stuff get in the way a little bit. But I guarantee you his feelings of winning a championship in L.A. were far greater and more, I guess, satisfying than winning it in Miami.
Yeah, because in L.A., it was his prime. In Miami, it was the way out. It was on the other side. That's the difference there. He was the man here. Not so much in Miami.
Yeah, he and D Wade, but he was very instrumental in that win, in that championship that they had. But I just think the championship in L.A. goes a lot longer and a lot deeper than it would be in Philadelphia.
Good friend of yours finds himself in an interesting position. We're going to talk about that. I want to get your take on your friend's spot. And stay with us during the breaks. Fred Rogan and Rodney Pete on AM 570 L.A. Sports. Jose in Winnetka. You're on AM 570 L.A. Sports. How you doing today?
Great. How you guys doing today?
We're doing great. I bet you're doing better now because you have won a pair of Dodger tickets brought to you by Mercedes-Benz. The best or nothing from the only station that gets you into the Dodgers games, AM 570 L.A. Sports. There you go, Jose.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
All right. We'll have fun at the game. Jose's a winner, and now you can be a winner as well.
And answer the phone. Somebody calls you, block number, unknown number. I don't care where it's coming from. Answer the phone. That's the only way you can win. Answer the phone.
Are we sure about this? Have they not built in a system where it direct replies you and says, yo, one large is calling you right now.
One
yo.
Large?
Yeah, one large is calling you on it the should caller
be.
ID.
Should
one
be.
Large.
Should be.
Shut up. No, they have not built in a system that says one large is calling you right now. No.
Bull crap.
Yeah. Shut up. You want that again?
Shut up.
Oh, good.
I love Jason's good. Attempt. I don't know what they yes. were. Yo, you got yeah. one large calling you right yeah. here. What
one
was
large.
That?
One
was
large. That? One
what?
Large.
What was that supposed
to just trying to appeal to the young audience.
He was in okay. Goodfellas 2, I guess.
All right. So anyway, by the way, do you think Houston has a chance to beat Golden State?
I really do. I do. I think they do. I think they match up really well. They can shoot the lights out just, you know, right with Golden State. But I think inside with Capella, they've got the advantage. So, and then the depth, you know, their bench is just as good, if not better, than Golden State. So absolutely they do.
You know, to be fair, you're a pal of Chris Paul's.
I am.
Right. And you've always thought that Chris has gotten a raw deal.
A little bit.
Yeah. And now he finds himself in a situation where they can wrap things up and move on to the Western Conference Final, which would be terrific for him. But he himself has a cautionary tale.
Mm-hmm. Your first ever appearance in a conference final. Have you allowed your mind to go that far yet?
Nah, it's the process, man. I've been here before, 3-1. Bad real quick. You know what I mean? So... it is what it is. We're just enjoying the process. Want to get home, see my family. You know what I mean? Good birthday gift. I'll take it.
So what do you think? Oh, by the way, his birthday was?
Yes.
Yesterday.
Yes, it was.
That's right.
Yes, it was.
Who else's birthday? I'll tell you the birthdays of yesterday.
Who?
Willie Mays.
Really?
Chris Paul. George Clooney.
Oh.
And me.
No.
Yeah.
Your birthday was yesterday?
It just made me think that when he said birthday, yeah.
You just remembered your birthday was yesterday when he said that?
You get to a point where you forget your birthday. Get to a point where you don't remember your birthday, huh? To that point.
I get to a point where I don't remember my birthday's coming up, but I don't forget my birthday, Fred. What in the world is going on with you?
You know, my short-term memory's shot to hell. But I'm at that age. It happens.
Oh, wow. So May 6th is your birthday.
Yeah, Chris Paul. George Clooney. I can't believe. And Willie Mays.
And Willie Mays. That's good company. Happy birthday, Fred.
Thank you very much.
Happy belated.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Absolutely. Appreciate that.
You know, it's a... I'm sure he's got the history. He took a lot of heat for not being able to carry his team past the first round, all those type of things. And he got a lot of blame, you know, a lot of praise, but a lot of blame here in L.A. For not being able to help his team advance. And subsequently, he's off to Houston. And now he's got an opportunity to go to the Western Conference Finals. So I'm sure he doesn't want to jinx it and doesn't want to talk about it too much. But this is a notch for him to get to the next level. Because you remember, when he got traded there, there were a lot of people saying that he couldn't coexist.
That it wouldn't work.
Yeah, he couldn't coexist with James Harden.
Right.
And they've been able to do that very well. Very well. And I don't know where most of the credit lies. Maybe it's James Harden being able to adapt. Maybe it's him being able to adapt. D'Antoni, I think, has been able. I don't think he gets enough credit for the job that he's done this season, because everybody looks at him as just as, you know, this free-for-all offensive coach that lets the guys do whatever they want to do and just pump up threes, we're gonna outscore you. But when you look at what they've done in this playoffs so far, it's been Houston's defense, actually, that has really helped them, you know, get the advantage so far, at least against Utah.
Yeah, I think that they will give Golden State a battle.
Yeah.
Yeah, at the beginning, I wasn't personally convinced that the Chris Paul, James Harden pairing would work. And, you know, I just thought, well, you're playing with two guards right off the bat.
Who need the ball in their hands.
Who need the ball in their hands. But they have coexisted, and quite nicely. Yeah. And by the way, if Houston gets close, wouldn't that be a great resting or landing spot for LeBron James? You put him in there with Harden and Chris Paul.
Yeah, and the way that happens is, they lose to Golden State, or at least do you think they have to lose bad to Golden State, like get swept or lose in five, and then they say, okay, our missing piece is LeBron James. Let's go get him. Much like Golden State, but Golden State had already won, and said, look, we're going to go get Durant and just put us over the edge. Because if Houston gets LeBron, they become the dominant team in the NBA.
Yeah, no, all bets are off.
Oh,
if they get LeBron.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, Chris Paul's brother was there, CJ Paul, and he was sitting and watching the game. And all of a sudden, the referee walks over to one of the security people and points at Chris's brother and says, throw him out.
Yeah.
Throw him out. So the security guy says, what do you mean? And the guy says, look, I didn't see him say that, but I know it was him.
Uh-oh.
Get him out of here. Throw him out.
What did he say?
I think he made a disparaging remark.
To the official, to the referee on the floor.
I didn't see him say it,
but
I know it was him. Get him out of here.
The official said that. I didn't see him say it.
Yeah.
But I know it was him. Get him out of here.
Right, throw him out. He's out of here.
What is he, an employee at Starbucks?
Wow.
Really weak.
That's where you went? That's where you went.
Shut up.
I didn't see him say it, but get him out of here.
Oh, my goodness. So wait. And then CJ was ejected?
No. Because then he said, I don't even know what this guy's talking about. I didn't say anything. He probably did.
Of course he did. I know CJ.
Yeah.
He gets a little feisty.
I bet he
did. Yeah, he does.
But you know, see, he'll turn your head so the guy can't hear you. Or, I was talking to my buddy. I don't know what you're talking about.
He does.
What are you complaining about?
CJ, when Chris was in New Orleans, they came to play the Lakers. I think it was a playoff game. They were here playing the Lakers. And CJ got into it with the Hall of Famer Frank Robinson. They were sitting right next because Frank is right there on the behind the basket every game. He and his family, and I know Frank and his family very well. But CJ got into it, and it was Holly. Holly had to calm CJ and let Chris know, hey, that's Frank Robinson. I don't think he really knew, but he was getting into it with Frank Robinson at the Laker game. I was like, come on, CJ. Respect for the Hall of Famer, man.
That's giving him a boatload of crap.
Yeah, exactly. They're going at it like they were two teenagers. Come on, CJ.
And the thing about Frank, if you know him, he doesn't back down.
No, he does not back down. He was not going to let it go. And CJ was like, keep going at him. Like, what are you doing? What are you doing?
The funny part is, like, CJ is getting escorted off the floor by security, and Chris Paul does, like, a double take. He looks, then he looks back, like, hey, what the hell's going on? This is his point. He starts yelling at the official and at the security guard, like, what the hell happened? Chris, just imagine trying to play a game, and you see your family member getting escorted off for no reason.
Yeah,
but he survived. He was welcomed back.
Yes.
Apparently, they had a conversation.
I didn't see him, but I know it was him.
I know it was him.
There's got to be some history there, right?
Yeah, but then they all worked it out, and CJ got to stay. And watch the end of the game.
Well, CJ says the official who was officiating that game officiated him when he played college basketball.
Oh, so really?
Like, I actually have a previous relationship with the official. So why would I say something that derogatory towards him in that manner?
Maybe that's the reason why.
But exactly why.
Yeah.
I have a relationship.
I remember that guy. He called a couple texts on me in college.
I'm called a check on him right here in front of everybody. Come on, Vic. God. Let's go.
Yeah.
Come on now, Vic. Come on now, Kevin.
It's time for good call.
Keep up the good work, guys.
Bad call.
I may have to hang up on him.
All right, gentlemen, is it a good call or bad call for the Clippers to give Doc Rivers a contract extension? Our fan Bill Plaschke, who I believe is in today, filling in for Petros this week on PMS, in his latest column said that he believes his sources have told him that all indications are Doc Rivers has reached an agreement to sign a contract extension with the LA Clippers to remain on as their head coach, as he was going into the last year of his contract going into this next year. Obviously, they went through a lot of adversity this season, just missed out on the playoff berth despite all the injuries and all the stuff they've had to go through, and there were rumors as to whether or not he would be staying on. Now it looks as if he will be here for the foreseeable future. So was it a good call or a bad call, Fred, for the Clippers to extend Doc Rivers as their head coach?
If Doc wants to stay, I think it's a great call. I mean, he has been the stability in the franchise for a long time. And you remember, he walked everybody through that Donald Sterling era. If Doc wants to go through what's going to happen, I think it's hard to find a guy much better. So absolutely, good call.
Rodney?
I think it's a great call. You know, I'm a big believer in loyalty. And as Fred mentioned, Doc was there that walked them through the Donald Sterling situation. Sure, they've had some disappointment in the playoffs, but he's been that stability. He's been that force. And hats off to Ballmer trying to be loyal to his guy. You think about this past year and what all went down with the trades and then, you know, dealing with the injuries. Doc has been able to keep them together and almost made the playoffs. So, again, if Doc wants to be here, I think he's the perfect guy to kind of get him through this rough patch and get him back to a playoff team.
Vic, I know you've had some moments with Doc in the past. Your thoughts?
You know that, Doc. I'm feeling you.
Doc moves me. He's moved me ever since he took over. How many head coaches have won championships in this league? Doc is one of the rare few in the association who's won a championship, of course, with the hated Celtics. But he is the foundation of this organization. And he and Ballmer, I believe, are now serious about pursuing free agents. You could circle any one of them, George, Bron. Clippers going after those guys. Ballmer is hell-bent on making the Clippers viable in this marketplace. Of course, Fred, you outlined the move to Inglewood. It's the proposed move, but it's a great move. Get their own venue. But Doc Rivers, man, he moves me.
You know, but when you refer to Donald Sterling,
I think he should be ashamed of himself.
He absolutely should. Moving on. Good call or bad call for the Dodgers to pursue Matt Harvey? Disgraced New York Mets pitcher was designated for assignment this past weekend after getting off to, well, a horrible start, to say the least. 0-2 record, 7 ERA. This for a guy that was one of the MLB's, at least the National League's, best pitchers as recently as 3 seasons ago. Injury issues with the front office has now precipitated him being designated for assignment. The Dodgers, no strangers to reclamation projects, especially in their bullpen, which is where Matt Harvey was moved to towards the end of his Mets tenure. So is that something the Dodgers should pursue? Would it be a good call or a bad call, Rodney, for them to pursue Matt Harvey?
Hey, listen. Yes, he had his issues. The Dark Knight, one of the best pitchers in the game for a couple of years, got caught up in that New York lifestyle and really fell off. And sometimes a change of scenery will bring it back. I still think he's got a tremendous amount of talent.
Okay.
I think coming to the Dodgers as a right-hander would be beneficial. Now, you don't have to overpay for the guy because he's desperate, but get him in here and see what he can do.
Fred?
Good call.
Okay.
Did you say his ERA was 7?
7.
That's misleading.
His ERA is 7. That would be brilliant. That's what you want. A guy to come in and throw batting practice. It's a terrible call. We're not paying a guy for what he did in the past. Hey, let's give him a shot. Who's the guy? Lincecum.
Tim Lincecum, yes. With the Angels. Yeah.
Oh, my God. No. No.
Now, the Dodgers have a track record.
He's a Dark Knight, Fred. It can resurrect him.
He looks like the Riddler right now more than anything. But if you go to... Thank you. I'm here all week. But remember, Joe Blanton was horrible with the Angels. Fell out of anywhere. And the Dodgers picked him up, and he was spectacular for their bullpen.
Absolutely.
So the Dodgers, with their analytic department, and they figure things out and what works and what doesn't.
Calm him down.
You never know.
You know what?
You know what I mean? Get him by the beach so he can calm down a little bit.
Sure, but I haven't seen their analytics, but I can look at the numbers right now. And analytically, you don't bring a guy in with a 7 ERA.
It's pretty bad.
Bad call.
Yeah. How about you, Vic?
The Dodgers are ready to go beyond the flotsam and jetsam scrap heap of relief pitchers that they've picked up and, you know, propped into stars. Maybe they should go now into starting pitching. Harvey is going to indulge in a lifestyle not only in New York. He indulges in L.A. He likes to walk on the wild side. But if he can pitch, Dodgers need pitching. Dodgers have a lot of holes this year to fill up. Why not? Give him a tryout. Put him in Arizona. See what he can do.
Speaking of the Dodgers, is it a good call or a bad call to spend $429,000 on a piece of memorabilia? There was an auction this past weekend, and apparently someone spent $429,000 on an autographed Sandy Koufax jersey. This was from Koufax's 1963 MVP season, where he won the MVP award in the regular season, also won the Cy Young, also won the World Series MVP that year when they defeated the New York Yankees. Now, the opening bidding started at $150,000. Someone actually bought this thing for $429,625, which is a hell of a lot of scratch for something that hangs on a wall and you can't do much with. So, good call or bad call to spend nearly $500,000 on a piece of sports memorabilia, Fred?
All right, well, if you're into art and you have the money, first, this is all based on the premise you have that kind of money.
Correct.
Because if you don't, it's insane and you would never do it. But if you had that kind of money and you could buy an Andy Warhol painting for $450,000, an original Andy Warhol painting, you'd buy it.
It's a bargain.
If you have the money.
No.
So if you have the money and you want that as a piece of art in your home, if you have the money, go ahead and spend it.
Okay.
I would not. But if you have the money, why not?
All right. Rodney?
Yeah, you know what? If some people love cars, they're going to spend their money on cars. Some people love houses and just buy houses. And if it's something and you're a tremendous Dodger fan going back to the Brooklyn and LA days, look, if you got the money to spend it and that's your passion, and you know, you think about that year he had, as you mentioned, Kev, you know,
amazing.
MVP, Cy Young, all those things. It's an incredible, incredible season. And for you to be able to document that, again, if you got it to throw around and that's your passion, you're a big time Dodger fan, go for it.
How about you, Vic?
What a bargain at $423,000. This is one of the greatest pitchers in baseball history.
Well, if that's the word I'd use, bargain, but all right.
Everyone bows down to Koo. One of the most masterful, had the most amazing fastball of his time and space, had the most amazing curveball of his time and space. You look at that five-year span, there's no one in baseball history, I believe, who had a more dominant span of time, that 5-6 year Koufax total domination of all things baseball. You know, there's millions of Koufax fans, and I can see, you know, that Koo jersey worn by Koo during the game to be a bargain at half the price. Who knew? Koo!
Okay.
I think he meant that's a good call.
Yeah, sounded like it to me, Fred.
You're telling me.
Last one before you check out. How about some hockey? Good call or bad call for forward Brad Marchand, only to receive a warning after twice licking the faces of opponents in the postseason. I don't know if you guys have heard of this story or not. So Bruins forward Brad Marchand first licked an opponent in the last series, Ryan Callahan of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Didn't get a warning or any kind of reprimand whatsoever. So they move forward to the next series, and he ends up doing it again to another player from the Toronto Maple Leafs. And then the NHL steps in and warns him, all right, don't do this again. You've already done it twice. You do it again, we're going to reprimand you even more seriously. And other people are like, well, is this borderline assault on the ice? Or I don't know how you should. There's no licking rule. There's no five minutes for licking that I know of when it comes to hockey. But some people believe he should have received a much more harsh punishment for doing this not once but twice in the postseason. So is it a good call or a bad call for the NHL to only issue a warning after he's already a repeat offender? Or was it sufficient enough to give him a warning and not a fine and or a suspension, Fred?
Look, the guy's a lover, not a fighter. No, he has said, you know, some guys I just like to nuzzle up to. I just like to give him a hug. He just wants to give him a lick. So, you know what? If he can get away with licking guys,
can't even say it with a straight face.
Hey,
what does it happen twice?
I know.
give a guy a fine or something.
Well, more than twice. He's done it before.
He has twice in this postseason. Yeah. So we're talking twice in like a 2 week span.
Don't hold it against the guy.
Don't hold it against him.
Don't hold it against him.
All right, so it's fine.
It's fine.
At least get a phone number after.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Look, I heard. Barry Melrose from the Four Letter Network talk about it. It was funny in the beginning, you know, when he did it before. And everybody had a nice laugh about it. But now it's gotten out of hand. And you do it twice in the same series. It's just, it's ridiculous. And, yeah, warning sometimes is not enough. You got to come down a little bit harsh. And it's Bush League. It's Bush League, and you shouldn't do it. Come down hard on it. It's ridiculous. Ridiculous, Kevin.
I agree. Vic?
It's hockey hypocrisy. You can pound a guy into submission, bloody his head, and there's no fine, there's no suspension, there's nothing. But you lick a guy's face, and then now they're getting into Marchand? Draw the line. Just say no, you know, either no, you can fight, but you can't lick? If you can fight, you can lick.
So you think that everybody should be able to lick everybody on the ice?
If you feel it, if you feel like Marchand, go start licking some players. It sounds weird, but I'd rather see someone lick someone.
That doesn't sound weird at all.
Pound someone into the ice and lay there bloody, and he doesn't play for 3 weeks, and there's no fine, maybe a one-game suspension.
Rodney, what would you have done if after somebody sacked you in the NFL they had licked you?
Yeah.
What would you have done?
Here comes Steve Mills. Nice
you
after.
Remember that movie, Longest Yard, yeah, where they used to let the guys come in? The quarterback, it was Burt Reynolds. They say, let him in, and then you hit him right in the, you know what, the family jewels. Yeah, that would be a discussion in the huddle. But I tell you one thing that happened. Reggie White, the late, great Reggie White,
yes,
may he rest in peace, with the greatest defensive player I played against. He would sack you hard, really hard, and said, I'm praying for you, brother. I love you, brother.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful.
And let it go at that. And it used to piss me off so much. But he was doing it in the name of the Lord, so you can't even get that mad at him. But to me, that was almost like a lick, because he would say, putting it in your face and say, hey, I'm praying for you. God loves you, brother. Even though you're on your back.
That's a good call, man. That's great.
Good stuff, K-Fig.
All right, yeah. When we come back, Bill Plaschke is in today for Petros, and Matt is here as well, and in theory, they will join us on AM 570 LA Sports.